I'm Elizabeth Ames, and this is the Women in Product podcast. Today is our final episode in the Path to CPO series. We're going to take a look back at what we heard that really stood out in these last five CPO interviews, and then wrap up the whole series with our key insights. To get things started, I want to reintroduce my collaborator on this series, Rashmi Ramesh.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Our shared passion for the podcast series definitely made the experience enjoyable. And here's to more successful collaborations in the future.
Rashmi, I thought we could start with the impact of this series overall. Maybe we can start with just the data on how many folks have listened to the series so far.
Yeah, definitely. So we launched our series with the introductory episode on February 8th of this year. Notably, 50% of the top 10 Women in Product podcasts of all time are now episodes from our Path to CPO series. The interview with Alex Hardiman stands out as our top performing podcast, boasting an impressive 1219 listens. It's not only just the highest listened episode in our series, but also ranks the second most listened to episode among all the web podcasts. Additionally, episodes featuring Jen Taylor, Anika Gupta, and Nupur Srivastava are all in our top 10, and it's, you know, just a matter of time before they each cross the 1,000 listeners mark. The series has definitely spurred significant growth in VIP's followers and dramatically increased listenership.
It's really gratifying to see how many people have listened and what we have heard from them. Any specific comments you want to share?
Yeah, there's been so many positive comments. Nirmala and Joanne Walters really enjoyed the episode with Yu Ying. Janvi Rao quoted, "Very few leaders are as honest, candid, and truthful in their interactions as you, Ketaki Rao." And Ramanuj commented, "Such an awesome episode. It's always something interesting to learn from Ketaki Rao, even at this podcast too." Rashmi Ramesh also asked very nice questions that every product professional would love to know.
It must feel great to hear such positive comments from people. Even some extra love in there for you on the questions. That must feel great.
I truly can express my gratitude for your invaluable help in bringing this idea to life. It's been an incredible journey, and I now feel that everyone within the Women in Product community knows and recognizes me for this work. It's like I'm on cloud nine. However, there's also a tinge of sadness as this journey comes to an end. I've always been a firm believer in cherishing the journey itself and savoring every moment rather than focusing solely on the end. You won't forget me, right, Elizabeth?
No chance that I'm going to forget you, Rashmi. It's been wonderful working with you and getting to know so many more women CPOs via this project. So many have reached out and asked how they could become involved in the community and the work that we're doing. And others have been introduced to us for the first time. It really feels like this series has helped women in CPO roles to connect with one another and with us. It's been amazing and incredibly gratifying to hear how excited they are to give back and be involved. So let's dig in to your interviews over the past 3 months with Annie Pearl, the Chief Product Officer at Calendly, Ketaki Rao, CPO at Data AI, Yuying Chen Nguyen, CPO at Barnes & Noble Education, Heather Gordon Freeland, CPO at Ancestry, and Amory Wakefield, CPO at Aquabyte. Let's talk about the key takeaways from these five interviews.
Yeah, let's start with Annie Pearl. She laid out a really good process to choose your opportunities and create that rubric for yourself. Let's listen to that.
One is the skill set angle. That doesn't necessarily have to be moving from company to company, right? It can be even within your own company and the opportunities that you seek out within your role where you might take on a project or an initiative that may not be directly within your, you know, sort of sphere of ownership, but you know it's going to enable you to acquire skills that you may not have or experiences that you may not have. So I think that's one angle, which is just really getting clear and crisp to yourself on what do I want to learn? learn with this next role, or if I'm in this role with these experiences I'm trying to, you know, take on. And I think the second is this a product that I want to work on? I really, really am fascinated by this problem space. I want to live and breathe it. The second for me, at least in the evaluations I've done, is the stage of the company, right? And so what you're doing as an early stage product manager, a company at an early stage startup, is very different than the product management you're doing at hypergrowth, which is very different than late stage growth, which is very different than, you know, a scaled, you know, big tech.
That rubric of number one, skills and experience, number two, the product space, and the stage of the company's development was something that other interviewees echoed. I think the skill experience piece and passion for the product space didn't surprise us so much, but the insight on thinking about the company stage was a big one.
And she was a big believer in choosing non-obvious opportunities in order to round her skill sets.
I have tried at various points in my career to identify opportunities that may not have made sense at the time, or if you were to look at it from the outside, you might have, you know, maybe scratched your head, or it wasn't necessarily the most logical next step. But for me, it was an opportunity to round out my skill set in areas where I didn't have experience before. So I'm just a really big believer in kind of going after opportunities that give you experiences and skill development that may not look like a very clear ladder.
She also laid out what a leader needs to possess based on the stage of the company in order to build great teams. Let's listen more.
When you're an early stage company, pre-product market fit, you know, the role of product manager is a lot of times to just execute with the right, just execute. And so, you know, you sort of, that profile of product manager is very different than maybe when you have product market fit and now you're kind of moving into hyper growth. And a lot of the product development work is, how do I make this thing that's working continue to work?
Now let's talk about Kataki Rao. I really appreciated how Kataki spoke about the challenges of being a woman in an executive role. She spoke about learning executive presence and also dealing with being an introvert. Let's hear what she had to say.
The one other thing I think was pivotal, especially for me, I'm an introvert by nature, so I really had to teach myself, was the communication, the presentation. People call it executive presence. I really never knew what that was. Like, what is this executive presence? But that was very critical. To learn how to be able to take command of a room, right? To learn how to be able to get people to listen to you, but also engage with you, right? Because today is not the day of me giving a monologue. I don't express my feelings that openly. Just like marketing yourself, like being able to talk about yourself has always been difficult for me. So I've found my way. The way I do it is I do it through LinkedIn, right? So I publish things that my team is doing.
Yeah, we often discuss the concept of luck, which involves being in the right place at the right time. But Kataki talks about preparing yourself for it by building your expertise. Let's listen more.
One of the key things is just building up your expertise. So, you know, I'd, of course, done product management at Amazon, which was one of the best places to start with. For product management and the customer obsession. But while I was doing my startup, I got in really deep on all aspects. So I knew how to build the platform really well. I knew how to sell it, not very well, marketing decently. So you have to build your competency up to that point, and then you will find the person who will trust you to take the next big step. But the competency comes from you. So, you know, build your own experiences, your own skill set, so you can do that job. And then the opportunities come.
I love this. What's that saying? Luck is the residue of hard work or preparation. I think she's really made a really important point for all of us to think about.
Yeah, I agree. Let's now look at Yu Ying's insight. Pitching herself for the CPO position while being an out-of-the-box candidate was very insightful for me, Elizabeth.
I saw the opportunity for Barnes & Noble Education, which I didn't know what Barnes & Noble Education did at the time. So I read it and I was like, this is interesting. I was not aware of this. And I indicated my own interest, because if you look at my background right before, it's not higher ed. So I looked at it like this, that at this level, if I'm going to approach, I need to bring something of value, some kind of idea. What's my pitch, right? I can't just be like, I'm interested at this level. That's not enough. I've done all kinds of different applications, basically saying, yes, I know I'm an out-of-the-box candidate and I have an out-of-the-box idea for you. And I'm actually, so that's kind of when I come into it with, which was also fun for the recruiter because they had something to say other than, I know it doesn't look like someone that you were looking for, but here's someone interesting and this is an idea. It's a little bit of a calling card on the product side, I would say.
Yuying talks about her experience with personal branding and how it helped her think more strategically about what she wanted and how to position herself for those opportunities. I found that really valuable.
I went through this exercise of, I think some people call it personal branding. But what do you want to be known for? What do you want other people to say about you when you're not in the room? If your product, what's the kind of product you want people to say? I want a product like this. Oh, this is the person. So that took a lot of work. And I really kind of honed in on what excites me. And also, where are my successes, and kind of try to align the two, right? So that exercise took me down where you see kind of my LinkedIn summary now in terms of that data-driven, AI-driven, the international and scale aspect. But the thing is, so once I identified, there were pieces of it where it was a passion, but there still needed to be more depth.
Yeah, she also gave me a lot of tidbits about reframing yourself first and breaking the perception barrier that might affect your consideration for future roles.
People like to ask you to consider positions that are at the same title as you have already done, even though the scope might be completely different, right? You have VPs and directors with very large operating budgets and done huge scopes and what have you. But this perception that, oh, well, if you have been VP for this many years, you're not quite, you don't have a C attached somewhere, there's that perception to break that, yes, you are at that level. And that's actually something I worked very specifically on in terms of both the resume and LinkedIn to kind of, you have to reframe yourself.
Let's talk about Heather. She has an interesting approach to building the right teams. Across her career, she observed other leaders that she admired to understand their management style. And from that, she formulated her own unique approach.
I looked around a lot as I was growing in my career, and I tried to learn from the things that seemed to be working, whether that was in my team or a different team I was admiring from afar. And then I would try and understand, like, what is it about the leader, the situation, the people that's creating this like really wonderful dynamic of success? And as I've grown in my career and I've had the ability to hire, I am always looking to hire for people from different backgrounds. And different backgrounds may mean how we look, may mean genders, it may also be parts of the world, and it may be just be life experiences, what colleges people went to and whether or not they went to a formal degree program of some kind. If you can push all those ideas together into one shared brain, you now have the learnings of many more diverse mindsets working together to build great products for customers.
Yeah, I thought that was a very unique way to look at it. Let's hear more about her outside-in perspective for making product and career decisions.
I am always trying to like grow and learn new skills and new things, but I often try to use the perspective of, if I'm faced with a hard choice and I'm fast forward like a year from now, what is the thing I would tell myself to do right now? And I try to use that kind of outside-in perspective to ensure that all those kind of micro steps you're making along the way, whether those are product decisions, decisions around your career, your relationships, I try and use that kind of outside-in thinking to ensure that I'm not going to be able to look back and have any kind of massive regrets.
Amory had this great insight, and it starts with why you want to be an executive in the first place. She asked a great self-reflection question about why she wanted to be an executive at all. This helped her see more clearly what she contributed and the kinds of organizations where she would fit.
Being an executive, it can eat up your whole life. So I think it's only maybe in the last 6 years that, you know, I got my daughter to an age when she was didn't need me as much and work could become a larger part of my life again, that I started to be interested in thinking about, do I want to be on an executive team? And then later, back when sort of the decision that I want to be on the executive team, I was really focused on my own leadership skills, why I go to work, what's important to me about work, what impact do I want to have, and is what does that mean to be a leader in an organization? Is that even the right choice for me? And really focused on that. And that's the last, gosh, like 6 to 8 years have been really focused on leadership skills and what kind of a leader I want to show up as. I do think shifting your focus to what does it mean to be a good leader for you, to being able to answer that for yourself is maybe the most valuable thing. That doesn't sound like a skill development, but I would say that was the most powerful thing, was the personal development aspect of it.
Yeah, and she also had a very clear understanding about when a company needs a CPO. Let's hear more.
I talked to a lot of companies after I left Hydro, and some of them weren't ready for a chief product officer, right? They really wanted a doer. They weren't going to hire more than one or two people under it. Strategy's pretty set. Their problem is an execution problem. Like, engineering and product isn't moving fast enough. And I'm like, that's not really what a CPO does. You want to hire a CPO when you really have a business challenge that you need and you're ready to give that challenge over. And I think talking to CEOs about whether they're willing to let go of some of that strategy or share it is the biggest conversation I had as I was looking for the next job, on scoping the job of a CPO as opposed to a senior director or VP of product, you know, an early stage VP of product who might jump in and just work with engineering on the road.
Now that you heard our takeaways from each of the five CPOs, we want to provide you with our top insights across all of the interviews. There are 6 insights. The first one is about being curious. For these women, their curiosity really powered their ability to adapt to new markets, new situations, and to connect with others. For example, Jen Taylor used curiosity to experiment her way across different functions and business models. Amory used it to move across different industries and to cross-pollinate those experiences. Both Heather and Alex built a range of experience across different stages of companies and discovered what really mattered to them were the product and the business scale, respectively. Annie found that choosing opportunities that weren't immediately obvious choices helped her know herself better and build a broader tool set.
The second insight is about understanding the role and how your skills align while identifying the gaps. First, it's important to recognize that you are actually interviewing the companies as much as they are interviewing you. That is your best opportunity to assess your skills alignment with the job. For example, Jen's superpower was deeply partnering with technical teams and helping them operationalize and scale. The challenge for her was finding a company at the right stage. Assessing skills alignment as a part of the recruiting process is important, but it is not a one-time activity. Aneka talks about constantly reinventing yourself based on the situations you encounter.
The third insight is about the mindset change from being an operator to setting a multi-year vision with the executive team. There were a lot of great insights on the differences between VP of product and chief product officer, where you go from being a functional leader to an executive. This change requires you to prioritize across your first team, which is now your C-suite members. Your role is to be a company leader, and that means you need to be able to form an opinion and weigh in on a diverse set of topics across the company, and not just your function. Sometimes what's best for the company could mean resource sacrifices for your product, but that may be the right thing to do. Aneka talks about when a company needs to make big bets that span multiple years. Those involve understanding the impact on the entire organization and clearly assessing the strategic implications. They are more than just product or technology decisions. Yu-Ying points out that ultimately being in a C-suite role means the buck stops with you.
The fourth insight is a simple concept, but a hard one to implement. Believe in yourself. If you believe in yourself, you're more likely to raise your hand to take on new projects that are a stretch. Or like Yu Ying did, to pursue an opportunity that didn't seem obvious to career growth to begin with. A part of believing in oneself is to also see yourself as the leader that you want to be. This was one of the most important self-reflections for Amory. Women face gender-related challenges all the time, and Amory ran into the likability issue. She chose to see it as a communication challenge rather than about her as a person. Nupur and Heather both discuss self-doubt and imposter syndrome. One of their strategies for coping was to remind themselves that they truly deserved their current role.
The fifth insight is about aligning your career choices with your personal mission by understanding what motivates you. Alex talked about realizing that the scale of impact was really important to her. She wants what she does to reach a lot of people. Nupur's mission is about making people healthier, and that has guided the roles that she has taken on. For Heather, finding that personal sense of fit in order to associate her brand with the products was critical for her. The problem space has to be fascinating for Annie, and that is what motivated her.
The sixth and the last insight revolves around understanding what balance means to you. We got so many interesting perspectives on finding balance throughout the series. Balance between one's personal and professional life is never static. Heather raised the bar for her career expectations because the opportunities had to be truly worthwhile for her time away from family. Alex, on the other hand, found help in unconventional ways in order to pursue her career and lead an exceptionally full life. The decisions that Nupur makes have been oriented around what she wanted out of her life, and they were about having an impact on the world and making people's lives better. Hence, she doesn't view it as a sacrifice as much as a choice.
Well, Rashmi, that wraps up our insights from the Paths to CPO series. It's been a wonderful journey meeting and speaking with these women product leaders. I've personally learned a lot, and I hope that all of you have as well. Rashmi, it's been great working with you on this series, and we've had a few other folks helping us along the way. We thought it would be fun to share insights and learnings from the entire team at Women in Product that worked on the series. Of course, Rashmi, who has been in it from the beginning with me, but also our marketing team, Jessica and Mia, as well as Saran Counts, our director of programs, who put together all of the executive content at the conference and just launched our new Executive Edge program. Rashmi, what was the most memorable about the podcast series for you?
Yeah, the most memorable aspect of this podcast series was really the post-interview conversations, you know, that you and I used to have. We were consistently awestruck by the women we interviewed, and we would engage in lengthy conversations and discussions about the interviews, often close to an hour each time, right? And the timing of this podcast couldn't have been better. I sensed a strong desire within the community to ascend and establish themselves as leaders, and the podcast fulfills that purpose. And personally, I feel that it was very well thought out and meticulously planned in terms of its content, our featured guests, and the value it provided. I'm going to cheat here a little. I know you asked for one memorable moment, but I did want to completely call out that I really underestimated the time and effort that goes into producing a podcast. And it truly was a team effort, and I genuinely enjoyed working with each and everyone associated with this.
Yeah, I love that you told people that we had those long conversations. They're probably now asking themselves, what did they talk about? It'll be our secret. Actually, right? It was probably all of the things that they talked about after they listened to them, how amazing the women were and what interesting insights they had. So I want to bring in Jessica and Mia, who are our amazing marketing team, and ask them, you know, what were those moments for you two? Jessica, maybe you'd like to go first.
Yeah. So when I first saw the brief about the path to CPO topic that Rashmi brought to us, I initially felt like it was a slam dunk, and this was a topic that would really resonate with our community. But you don't really know how the community is going to respond to it until you put it out into the world. So the thing that was really exciting for me is when we launched the very first episode with Alex Hardiman, the CPO of the New York Times. We were all kind of anxiously waiting to see how it would do. And in the first 24 hours, it had the most plays of any episode of our podcast that we've ever had. So it was really, really exciting to see that this topic deeply resonated with our community.
And Mia?
In addition to just listening to all the captivating stories that our CPO shared on the podcast, you don't really know how a social media post is going to do once you post it. You can think, oh, this episode's going to do well. It has this person from a notable company. It's remarkable to see that these CPOs had a phenomenal impact on the product community itself.
So Mia, talk a little bit about that first time that you put a social media post out about this.
When the comments started rolling in for Alex's podcast, it was just astounding to see that there are women on her team supporting her. Women from the product community loved hearing her feedback. Even the executive dinner that she was a part of in New York City, people were engaging the post on that.
So I want to bring in Saran Counts, because Saran is our director of programs, and she really took this series and kind of the spirit behind it and kind of took it to a whole nother level by incorporating it in small dinners that we had in a variety of places, but also probably most visibly at the conference. And Saran, maybe you can talk about what was memorable about this for you.
I think the most memorable thing for me was just the openness and the vulnerability and the transparency of all of the CPOs and how they spoke just so openly and honestly about their journeys. And they didn't seem to hold anything back, right? And I think it was just very relatable for everyone in the community. You know, the women could see themselves and they could see their own journeys and the journeys they heard about. And it really came to light when I attended the executive dinner in New York, and Alex Hardiman was our guest CPO there. And you could just kind of look around the table and see the smiles and the head nods as she talked about different aspects of her journey. And it was very heartwarming to see that, to see the community really respond in that way. And the conference, the overwhelming response, not only of those that attended the conference, but when I reached out to the women to volunteer to do different sessions at the conference related to Path to CPO, and even for the promotion roundtables, right, for our vice presidents of product, it was overwhelming. I had to keep adding sessions because there was such a huge amount of interest in the women sharing with each other and making sure that they had a say, right, in how the women heard about what they could be doing in their own careers to keep progressing.
Yeah, I have to say one thing that's really fascinating to me is it's like the series uncorked this huge discussion that everybody wanted to have, and that all of the sudden they were able to have, that they heard other people speak frankly, and so then they felt like they could speak frankly about what their experience was or what they, you know, thought about a particular role. And it was really interesting because that conversation happened both on the podcast, but also in the social media realm. And then, you know, Jessica, maybe you want to speak briefly to the women in the community who then listened to them and wrote blog posts about it, right? So there was another place where people engaged. And then definitely at the conference, all over the place, it felt like there was just such a strong dialogue. Jessica, do you want to talk a little bit briefly about the blogs?
We wanted to expand the conversation. So we had community members at all levels in their career reflecting on this podcast series and what the CPOs had to say about their journey and the different paths that they took to get to being a CPO. And so particularly after the conference, when we had the keynote panel and there were so many heartwarming comments about it and how candid all of the CPOs were in the discussion. So many of the community members were starting to raise their hand to be a part of this blog series, which is where we were able to compile different reflections from people in different parts of the industry and at different career levels and share those reflections with community members so they could start thinking about the next steps in their career toward advancement.
Mia, do you want to talk briefly about, you know, that discussion on social media, right? It seemed like it started with the very first post in the very first episode and then really continued to build momentum all the way through the conference and maybe even beyond.
When we first started putting out the first blog post, it seemed like a very interesting way for community members to have an open conversation and dialogue about what does it mean to be a CPO. And having our guest writers write the takeaways from each episode allowed for a grander conversation on social media. When I posted about an episode, we would get feedback, oh, this is amazing. And it just allowed an extra layer of inspiration to the women listening. And I was able to see each time we put out an episode, the analytics grew each week.
One thing I want to add to that too is that Mia grew the social media following on LinkedIn. And I think the last 6 months from about 40,000 to 50,000 followers. And I think a lot of the podcast content was a big contributor to that.
I think the aha moment for me in the podcast was actually in the name of the podcast, right? Path to CPO. Because the thing that was the constant thread for me was that there is no one path to CPO. I think when you think about a path, you think it's a straight line from point A to point B. And what these women shared in their stories is that there is no straight line. And all of their stories were different and unique and fascinating in that, you know, where they started was not necessarily where they saw themselves ending, but they got there. That is something that I know will resonate with our community, because the one thing you hear from product people all the time is that they sort of fell into product, right? And their path into product was different, and it's not the same for everyone. So I think, you know, understanding that you don't have to do it the same way or the same way that Alex did it or the same way that Yuying did it is an important thing to understand, because the women can see in themselves that they can actually get there as well.
Yeah, I think that that's such a great point. You know, I think that every single one of those nine women had a different pathway. And I'm sure that there's, you know, lots of other pathways that aren't necessarily represented there. Saran, I want to kind of take a minute and kind of project forward, right? As we wrap up this series, we have other things going on, and I know that you just launched an important program that kind of builds on all of these pieces that we've been talking about. So maybe you'd like to just briefly talk about Executive Edge.
Yes, the Executive Edge program is our inaugural program where we're partnering with the Athena Alliance. That's an organization that historically has been able to take different groups of women with various backgrounds and help accelerate and give them a comprehensive program that they can take part of to get them to C-suite and board positions. So we looked at this program and thought, wow, wouldn't it be great if we did something like this for our women, but gave it a little bit of a product spin, right? Because that's the one thing that we felt might be missing in their program. So this is going to be a one-year program. The participants will have access to the Athena Alliance. So everything that they offer as part of their offerings, they have a path to C-suite pathway or journey that the participants will have access to. They have successful members in their, that's part of their program that the participants will have access to for coaching, for networking, that will be presenting various very content-rich sessions to them. And then Women in Product will come in with our amazing Executive Edge Council, which is 8 women that we put together that are leaders in our own community, that they themselves are chief product officers. We have a couple of CEOs and one senior vice president at a huge company. These women will act as mentors. They will help us to curate the content that we bring to the participants. They were instrumental in helping us promote the program. They recommended women for the program. They helped us to vet the applicants because we want to make sure that those that are coming into the program are ready for this. This is the step in their career that will get them to the C-suite. So we have over 40 participants. We have 47 participants right now, and I'm cheering at that. And we're looking forward to having, you know, 47 great stories when the year is over.
I just want to kind of end with that note that, you know, not only were we able through this series to really peel back the onion and show people what it takes and what that those many pathways are to chief product officer, what it takes in terms of skills and change in your mindset and a number of things like that. But we're kind of taking that next step to provide programs that will help women that are sort of on that cusp move up to that level, move up to the C-suite, move up to senior VP, those types of roles. And we're really excited about that. So great job. I just wanted to say thank you to all of you. You're really the team that you're like the dream team that made this all happen. And I think it was a great series. And I know I learned a lot and really appreciate all of the great work that you guys did. Thank you. Thank you for listening. And thanks also to our partners, Discover, Google, Meta, and Upwork, who provide annual support for the work of Women in Product and our community. This podcast is an original production of Women in Product. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Leave us a review so that others can discover us, or share this episode with people you know. If you have any questions or suggestions for future guests or topics, you can reach us at podcast@womenpm.org.